Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green, computer consultant with Infostar.com, and we'll talk a bit about privacy with him today, answer your computer questions. We'll take a look at your phone and maybe how to get rid of annoying calls with him. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Pete, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Oh, he's great, Larry.
How about protecting our online privacy? What are your rights to privacy on the Internet?
Well, the way people look at web pages is using a web browser. So, you know, the current ones that are used today, Microsoft Edge, the precursor to that, Internet Explorer, Google Chrome, Mozilla, Firefox, Opera. I think Opera is still popular on TVs. I know it's on one of my smart TVs. There are settings in those browsers that allow you to strengthen your privacy, you know, when you're looking at things and dealing with pop-ups and turning on or enabling add-on functions to or add-ons that go to your browser, like JavaScript, and Adobe's got a bunch of them, you know, Shockwave, Flash Player. When you look at PDF files, if you download the Adobe Reader, that usually tags into your browser. So if you're looking at a PDF file, you know, you can look at it within your browser. So there are settings you can play with and make changes to in your actual browser that you're using. And a good thing is to always have a couple of different browsers on your system. So if one's acting weird, you can kind of check it out and see what's going on with the website with the other browser. There are also, there's a search engine I listed in the top 10 this month called DuckDuckGo, which allows you to anonymously browse using or search the web using their search engine. So it's not really collecting anything from you. It's not throwing ads your way. So it's not like with Google using their way of, you know, paying for their free Google search engine is that there are advertisements. There are keywords that people buy or companies buy for placement. So when you're searching for books or cars or used cars or real estate or, you know, a pair of socks or whatever it might be, you know, they're trying to leverage what your interest is with people that are buying these keywords and advertisements to put those in front of you. So an anonymous web web search engine like DuckDuckGo does not, you know, do that. And they talk about it on their site, you know, in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. There's another browser called Tor, T-O-R, which basically allows you to browse the web, and, you know, there's nothing given out in terms of who you are and your, you know, where your 1020 is, you know, using the old CB talk for location. So there are those things that, you know, people can use to just, you know, kind of cover their tracks, if you want to call it that. There are also applications that you can download, and I put a list of articles to check out online at the end of my top 10, which are written by, you know, very long-standing, well-versed organizations in terms of dealing with the Internet, the web, and so forth, where there are certain apps you can download, not only for your PC, but also for your phone, protect your privacy. The Android phone, which is an open operating system, you know, you should definitely have something like an antivirus on that. And we've talked about this numerous times. Something like Avast or AVG is made available for that. And then I use an app for blocking my telemarketers that seem to have an affinity for liking to call me.
Yeah, I've got that same issue.
And I used, Larry, we talked about this earlier, and I used to do what you did, where I'd let the call come in, and the call would come in, and if I was feeling good, I'd answer it. If I wouldn't, I'd let it go to voicemail, And then if they didn't leave me a voice message, you know, just wouldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
And you could put it in your block list in your phone. Well, I ran the limit of my block list in my phone, and I was like, this is ridiculous. So I talked to a friend of mine, and he recommended using the CM Security for Android. And there's a free version, and what it does is it basically identifies, it's like caller ID for telemarketers, and tells you, you know, that, hey, this is an advertisement or a telemarketer or a solicitor or a scam call. It tells you that, and you just reject it, and that's it.
No.
So it really has helped quite a bit. There are some things that you have to get used to in working with it. And so I'm not endorsing it. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, you know, if you want, you know, take a look at it,
check it out.
But it works for what I intended it for. The other things that come along with it, I don't use that much. And I'm still trying to, you know, play and learn it. But as far as what I wanted accomplished for dealing with incoming phone calls, it worked great for me. One thing to keep in mind is that just like antivirus software, and we've said this since you know, day one, and there are white papers out there that reinforce what I've been saying, that, and what white papers are is that companies have done research, they've looked into it, and they said, hey, these are the things to pay attention to. And one thing is to realize that nothing is 100% safe unless you're unplugged from the internet or you're not, you know, you know, you're not using your phone or you're not using your PC to be online. And what I mean by that is there are always hackers trying to get around, you know, being found. And the ones that are found, they eventually get reported, and that's how they get on the block list and scanned, and, you know, for removal from your system or an email attachment and so forth. So if you have a telemarketer that's not identified by something like CM Security or by Avast or whatever antivirus it is, you know, report it, because by reporting it, you're helping others. Yeah. And that's how, you know, they keep building their database on what's good and what's bad, especially with what's bad.
Lots to think about there. What is it again? What's
CM Security? CM Security. And it's, you know, I use it on my Android, Samsung. I'm sure there might be a version of it for the iPhone. But, you know, you can browse in the Play Store, Google Play Store for Android phones for apps. So CM Security is not the only one that does this. There are others. But when I saw, the reason I brought this topic to light here is because I remember seeing a TV newscast about this very thing. And I'm like, why aren't you people talking about how to be proactive and just saying you can get an app for your phone that will block telemarketers?
There we go. Well, David in South Milwaukee has a question for you. So let's go there. David, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am wondering if the various ISPs and search engines all have opt-out provisions for privacy and how difficult it is to use them. And by the way, if one uses DuckDuckGo, do you limit your kind of information that you get? Because Google is like got all kinds of information, but I wonder if DuckDuckGo is limited.
Well, you bring up some good points. I just recently found DuckDuckGo, so I don't have a lot of time, you know,
experience with it
to tell you know, how is it doing in terms of finding information out on the web. I can tell you, you know, the value of Google and companies that try to get placement in Google and try to be found is that it's based on relevancy. You know, if the information that you're not getting from Google isn't relevant, then you're not going to want to use Google. So it's a service that they provide to make sure that, you know, when people are linking into the Google search engine, that there's relevancy to be found, because you would start to mistrust Google for finding information for you. So, you know, in terms of opting out, I've never done anything like that, because I'm trying to find out what's being put out there in front of people, both good and bad. And I've used Google for many, many years, and you know, other than getting, sometimes I look at the ads, you know, sometimes I go, I wonder what this is about. You know, it's piqued my curiosity and I'll check it out. And if it isn't any value, then I just, you know, I move on.
Yeah.
But the relevancy is the key thing in terms of any search engine, because if it's not going to provide you with good search results, you're going to just simply stop using it.
Now, the first part of the question, let's see, I've forgotten your first part of your question, David.
It was, did they all have opt-out provisions? Do the companies respect them? Oh. And is it very hard to use them?
Boy, you know, in terms of if they have opt-out provisions and whether or not they respect them, you know, that's a tough one to answer because I don't know, you know, the governing body of who would be, you know, saying, hey, they're doing a great job or they're not. Or it could be an independent study and how often is it done, you know, that they've respected your wishes. Like I said, I don't have any experience with opting out with using search engines because typically I'm just using them to see what value they're providing, both good and bad.
Okay. And maybe somebody else has had an experience with it, too. Well, stay listening, Dave. We'll
I just remember all these other, you know, there's Yahoo and Bing, you know, with Microsoft. You know, they all use some advertisement support, you know, people buying the keywords and throw an advertisement in front of you. So I guess part of it has to be the good with the bad.
There we go. Thanks for calling, David. Appreciate it. I want to give Bob a chance to join in. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got a MacBook Pro. It's got dual hard drive. It'll run Windows and Mac programs. And I kept it plugged in for basically the last 2 or 3 years, only, you know, unplugging it, you know, to use it on the battery for a few times. And one day it just simply wouldn't start up anymore. And, you know, I used it the day before, went back to turn it on the next day, and nothing happened. When I push the start button, I can hear a really faint startup noise. I got to put my ear right close to the screen to hear that. And it just simply won't power up anymore.
I know with certain devices, in terms of, especially with like laptops and portables, when they don't turn on, and you know they are appliances, they are pieces of hardware. There's sequences that you can do with the on-off key, you know, the on-off button, and having them plugged in or not plugged in to try and power them up. What I would do is I'd probably check online and see if there's something that exists, and they change them for different models of MacBooks, for iPads, for iPhones, and so forth. When something freezes and you need to, like, reboot it, and, you know, you have to find out what sequence that is. Sometimes it could be a device internally that's shorting out the laptop so it won't start up. You mentioned that there are two hard drives. Usually it states that there's a problem reading or accessing one of the hard drives, but it can also be a short where it's just simply, you know, creating a roadblock for the rest of the system to start up.
So he'd have to go to another computer or a smartphone and look it up?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
The other thing is you could call the Apple store and talk to a tech there and ask them what they would recommend doing prior to you actually bringing it in to them. If you have access to an Apple store, I know there's one in Madison.
Yeah, he's in Madison.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
So you could, you know, pick that route. And what I would do is I would make an appointment, schedule a time to bring it in. Otherwise, you could go to the store and be surprised with how long you're going to wait to actually see somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so take a look, and he would need to know his model number and all.
Yeah, it helps because they change how to do those things.
Yeah.
You know, the sequence to use. I know I had a laptop once, and it had a hard drive would overheat, and I couldn't get it to start up after it had overheated. So I called in it was a Compaq at the time. And they said, oh, this is what you have to do. You have to hold this down and do this, and then
Then it'll work. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good luck. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest today. You can join in as well with your personal computer questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guests talk about the future of the Great Lakes. That's at 2. Right now, taking a look at your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Join in, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Annie in Appleton up next. Hi, Annie. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Okay, my question is, I need both a new battery for both my laptop and my my tablet. And with all of the problems with catching on fire, I'm just really apprehensive of what would be the safest kind of battery to get and where I should get it. I have a Dell, and then I have a Samsung for my tablet.
Okay.
What I typically do is I go online and look at a few online sellers, and then I check locally and, you know, see how the price is fair and what the guarantees are. Company called Tiger.com, Tiger Direct. Newegg, Newegg.com. Those are two good places. And I don't know where you're located, but, you know, in Madison, some of their warehouses are located in Chicago. And I've had stuff where I ordered it, you know, by 2 o'clock, you know, today, and it'll arrive, you know, tomorrow, which
pretty
is
pretty quick.
Yeah, and I want to make sure if I'm getting a Dell that it's really a Dell. It's not some knockoff that, you know, is made in Timbuktu that
is going to be catching fire. In that case, with Dell, sometimes these places do sell replacement parts from Dell. Occasionally that happens, but you might have to contact Dell directly. And then as far as the tablet, you know, just look and see whether or not it's saying Samsung compatible or it's actually a Samsung product.
Although the Samsungs were the ones catching fire.
Well, it was a particular phone that was having a problem.
I know, but it's kind of scary.
that's what they don't want to hear. But, you know, I understand your concern about that, but it was actually tracked down to a particular phone. And, you know, phone model. It was having the battery issue with catching fire and so forth.
Okay. You
can go online and, you know, plug in your Samsung tablet, the model number, and see if there's any other concerns with it.
There may be, if there's any calls, mm-hmm. recalls or anything, you'd get that.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's just as safe to buy it online as opposed to going to one of the big stores with the yellow sign?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I've been doing it for more than 10 years.
And you haven't had any fires.
No.
Okay.
You know, you bring up an interesting concern in terms of fires from appliances, computers, tablets, phones, things like that. Probably, you know, one of the biggest areas would be, you know, a power supply that's in a desktop where it's getting weighted down by dust over time. You know, take a can of spray and just, you know, blow it out.
We don't have any dust at my house.
See, they're going away. The desktops are going away.
Just cat hair.
I know about that, Annie.
Hey, thanks a lot for your help, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, good Annie. Let's see, Pepin in Milwaukee, we go to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on. And I'm not sure if this exact issue was covered earlier on in the show, but with the new FTC guidelines, if you contact your internet service provider and ask to be opt out of this new data collection program, they are actually required to give you a way to do so. And I think that it doesn't have to be easy or obvious of a way to do it. And what I would really love to see someone out there do is to create a website with a database of the exact procedure to opt out for each ISP. And my point with this is that it only makes sense for them to collect this data if they have enough of it. Below a certain point, It just simply doesn't make fiscal sense for them to continue to even try to collect the data if enough people opt out. And they have spent not an enormous amount of money, but a significant amount of money to get this change passed. And if we want to safeguard our privacy in the future, I think it would make sense to make sure that the return on this investment is canceled out.
Mm. And you said the FCC?
Yeah, because they changed the people regulating the Internet service providers from the FCC...
To the FTC.
Yeah. And the one bright glimmer of hope is that they have to let you opt out.
They have to.
I don't know if they're still around, but there used to be, because a lot of internet connections were dial-ins, and then broadband came along. But there was a site called The List that had all of the internet service providers. But now what you've had is there are some in the outlying areas, like here in Wisconsin, Frontier is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all of them, but. There's so much that's been taken over between AT&T and Charter and, Roadrunner, which then got acquired by Charter. So, I don't know if that list still exists, but,
Called The List?
I'm pretty sure it was called The List.
Huh. Yeah. You're worth a look at anyway. Thanks for that call. Appreciate it.
Yep.
You can join in, too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Patty in Manitowoc, it is your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hi. I have a question on my computer. It's a desktop. It's a running Windows 7. It's an HP, probably about a year and a half old. And ever since I got the thing, I don't like wires on my desk, so I've had, a wireless keyboard and a wireless mouse. They just don't communicate very well with my computer, and I've changed out the keyboard and mouse once already, and I don't know if it's a computer issue or if I just have to keep trying these wireless devices. Does that make sense?
Where do you have the receiver for the mouse and the keyboard located on the computer?
It's right on the hard body of the computer, which is at a 90-degree angle.
Okay. Is it on top of your desk? Is it under your desk?
It's probably, it's not that far. It's probably just underneath where the keyboard is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's under the desk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that might present a problem. Sometimes I've had problems where batteries, you think they're good and they're not, as strong as they should be. When you change the batteries, do you still have the same problem?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's something that's creating interference.
Okay. So if I still have the issue after I rearrange where that receiving device is, mm-hmm. is it possible that it's within the computer itself?
You said you've done this, changed it out a couple of times?
I have. Not the receiving device, but the keyboard and the mouse.
Hmm. So you're using the same receiver. Was it the same model of keyboard and mouse that you changed it out with?
No, it actually was a different one. I went from an HP to a Logitech, and I was having the same issue with both.
Because usually they come with their own specific little, receiver that plugs into a USB port.
Okay.
So there should have been one that came with...
I did. And actually the Logitech one I put on the USB port. It's now that I'm thinking of it, I apologize, I'm not at home, but it's actually plugged into the front of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I should just get a USB extension and sit it on top of my desktop by the...
Do you have both of them plugged into your computer?
I don't think so, but I can check that.
Okay. You might want to change it to a different port and see if that helps with the receiving.
Okay.
One is the strength of batteries, one is something running interference, something with the port being bad, so changing to a different port location.
Those are the basic ones.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, I'll try troubleshooting that. Those lots of good ideas.
The other thing is if you have any other devices that might be running interference, like not laying your phone down right next to the computer... You know, anything that might be giving off some kind of wireless signal that might be causing interference.
Yeah, another thing to think about.
Yep. I know it's a crazy thing. I'll lie in bed, and I'll be switching my remote, and then I've got this speaker slash, you know, it's for a radio, but it can also hook up to anything with USB, and then all of a sudden it'll turn on.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, something as simple as a wireless remote can, you know, can run interference as well.
Yeah. We've got a lot of those. Okay. Yep. I appreciate your input. I'll try all those things.
All right. Thanks a lot, Patty, for calling. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234, and we'll get you right on. John in Port Wing emailed to say that when he goes to his control panel on his XP computer, he does not get the option to change and remove programs. So he goes to his control panel on his XP computer, does not get the option to change and remove programs. How can he remove programs he doesn't want?
Well, you can install an app called CCleaner, which will allow you to add and remove programs that you don't want. The fact that it's missing from the control panel... there are ways that you can, and I haven't done this with XP in a while, but you can run a check with the Windows program to see what's missing and have it communicate with Microsoft to reinstall those missing components.
Because it should be there.
Yeah, if you have the... And here's another thing. If you have the original disks for Windows, you'd probably go online and find out how to install that, but you'd have to extract it off of the disk itself.
Yeah, it'd be easier the other way.
But the easy way is something like CCleaner, which is a utility that has the ability to uninstall programs on your system.
And it's free, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a free version.
Yeah, there we go. Keith in Eau Claire uses Edge to browse, and he's been getting an alert every time he gets a new email. How can he stop that? Gets an alert saying, oh, you got a new email, I guess.
There must be a feature in Edge.
There's got to be a feature in there.
In preferences or options to turn that on or off. It might be in security settings.
Okay.
I did not know it interacted that way with email.
Yeah. But if you go to security settings.
Yeah.
You should be able to
I mean, Edge is a browser.
Yeah.
So it's notifying him that he has an email. That, if he's using something like Outlook, usually there's a little pop-up that Outlook says, you know, you've got new messages.
I get a little ding every time.
But browser typically doesn't interact with your email unless you're using some online email like Hotmail or Yahoo or Gmail. Then it might interact that way. And that's really notification of the email from the email system.
Yeah.
There's no reason why Edge should be touching on your email.
No. Randy in Endeavor, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. See, I might have an answer for the lady that was having trouble with the mouse keyboard wireless issues.
Yeah.
I've been a technician for 30 years in electronics, and a lot of times I have found a light bulb or fluorescent ballast can be causing the RFI in a room. Even a bulb after it's been in for a while, because it's heated and cooled, the little drop of solder on the bottom will become compromised, and it'll make a tiny little arc, which is basically like a an arc transmitter. And that will make an RF field all around that room and kill any communications.
Wow.
That's so fluorescent.
That's a good one.
That's one I've never heard.
I've had people, I used to be in the satellite industry, and somebody's UHF remote would be non-functioning. I said, well, go, do you have a light on? Yes. Go shut it off. How do you do that?
Wow.
They're very mystified.
That's a good one to remember.
Boy, oh, you aren't kidding. Thanks, Randy.
So is it just with fluorescent? just with fluorescent lights?
Yeah, that was actually an incandescent causing that issue.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so it can be
a ceiling fan.
Well, what about the LEDs now?
I would suspect anything electrical. She could even have a telephone charger causing it, a transformer from any other device hooked up to it. It's a process of elimination.
Well, because
to try and discern what the problem is.
So what about the printers that have the little boxes that they're plugged in, you know, the power supplies that keep them external to the printers?
Right, that could be a source of it, but generally those do have good enough filtering capacitors in them, unless the capacitor has failed.
Okay.
And then you would have that RFI creation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool. Thanks, Randy.
Yep.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, you learn something new every day,
yeah.
don't you?
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
Wow.
Terry in Mass City, it is your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Great show again, Larry.
Thank you.
Hey, the unifying software for the keyboard and mouse, I just got a new Logitech.
Okay.
It has a unifying little dongle that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to download software from Logitech to set your computer up. And then you can program all those things so that your keyboard, your mouse, everything can use that one little dongle that's in there. I don't know if she had a new enough one to have that on or not, but that's the way to go these days.
Oh.
So that could also be a problem.
Yep.
It is for people. I'm reading on Amazon where they couldn't get it to work, and someone said you have to download the software, which I did. I have a URL if it helps anybody.
Hmm.
I can post it on your...
Yeah, post it. Put it up on our Facebook page.
So that's another possibility too.
All right, thanks, Terry.
It's okay. All these little things play factors in whether or not
isn't that amazing?
They work or they don't.
Isn't that amazing? Call in with your question or comment, or maybe you've got an idea to share. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly.
You know, Larry. Usually, when you're plugging in new accessories into the computer, it will. It used to not do this, but now it does. When you plug it in, especially with the USB port, it acknowledges that it, you know, it's now part of the system, and it may tell you that it's downloading additional software. It may tell you whether or not you need to reboot your computer. And sometimes it seems like it's working, but if you don't reboot your computer, you may not be getting all the features of having restarted your system. So, you know, those are other little things to pay attention to as well.
I had to move offices, and so computer unplugged and taken from one office to the next, and now my email doesn't work. And I've restarted it, and our tech guy will fix it for me. Oh, man. Jade on Facebook.
Are you sure it's plugged in?
it is plugged in. Jade on Facebook would like to transfer her iTunes library from her MacBook Pro to an Android phone. She has the Android transfer app. However, when she plugs the phone into her computer, she keeps getting a message saying it's not plugged in, speaking of being plugged in or not, or the phone is locked. And which it is not.
Yeah, it could be very frustrating. I've dealt with that. It's not fun.
Yeah. Well, any ideas? What do you do?
So you're trying to transfer it to the MacBook to an Android phone.
Yep.
You know, there are good days and bad days with that stuff. Sometimes it cooperates and sometimes it doesn't. And it could be really infuriating. If you have, I've tried it with, you know, additional SD cards, and sometimes I've had luck where I've been able to transfer this stuff over to the SD card. But it can be very fickle.
Okay. So you just have to keep trying, in other words.
Yep.
Oh, boy. That's a pain.
Yeah.
A big pain. Linda and Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Linda.
Morning. I am calling. I'm using my iPad, and every once in a while I have this pop-up that says my iPad has won $1,000. And do you want to accept? And what I do is go into my cookies and clear that as what, you know, it looked like I was supposed to do from iPad. but I still keep getting those. Do you have any suggestions?
So what kind of system is this happening on?
Safari on my iPad.
Safari on your iPad.
Safari is the
yeah, right.
Engine.
So you're getting pop-ups on your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I would. You could probably download Avast or AVG, or or take a look at Malwarebytes for your Mac for your iPad. See if those are available. You shouldn't be having.
I haven't had that problem.
You shouldn't have pop-ups on your iPad.
No.
So
Okay. I didn't think so either, but I went in, I Googled it, and a lot of people said that, or, you know, and then I went to the iPad site, and it said to go to your settings and clear your cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but you did that, and you said it came back.
Well, eventually, yeah, it comes back. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what site is causing that to happen?
I don't remember. Isn't that terrible?
I mean, it could be that there's a site that's triggering it. So, I would, you know, if you make note of what site it is, I would just stay away from it.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah.
It typically does not happen on an Apple product.
No, I've never had that happen. Thanks for calling, Linda. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Pat in Port Washington, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, your guest. I love your show, Larry, and I learn something every day that I listen to it. So.
Thank you.
What I have is I have an HP Chromebook, and I'm having an issue with some of my keys. So if you start at the top of my Chromebook, the 6 and the 7, and then the Y in a diagonal, 6 and the 7, the Y and the U, the H and the J, and the N and the M.
Huh.
No other keys. It's not consistent, but I would say about 80% of the time they don't work.
Oh.
And I have not spilled anything on it, and I have just, I've asked some people who are pretty savvy, and they've said, I've never heard anything like that, so.
The way around there somewhere that's.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I've done it with laptops where you take off the cover, and the keyboard stuff is exposed. And it might be something as simple as that you've got some dust or something that's interfering with connectivity, because it's making an electronic connection when you depress the key.
When you press any of those keys, generally speaking, you get absolutely nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is there's something interfering.
Right.
And,
correct.
And the only way to do that is either, you know, you try, you know, you can go online and probably look at a YouTube video that will, you know, take you step by step on how to clean your Chromebook keyboard.
Okay.
You might want to put in your specific model. Someone may have, you know, done it exactly for what you own. So that's one way to do that, or to take it into a place that will, you know, service that.
Okay.
And they would probably do the same thing initially.
Okay.
To see if
I just
that
thought
would
it
help.
Was strange because it was in a perfect diagonal, and you know what I mean. That's what kind of threw me as to what it could be. So I will try to do that.
All right. Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you so much for calling, Peter Green of Infostar.com. Our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. We are taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of Infostar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. Call in 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Jerry in Johnson Creek up next. Jerry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Peter.
Hi.
I have Apple products, a Mac Mini, iPad, and the phone. I have two mail accounts. One is Gmail, and one is the Apple account. And I only use, on the Apple account, I only use the me.com. That's what I use. I don't use the iCloud.com. I used to get a lot of Gmail emails selling me everything from siding to mail pattern baldness products, and I would get those on my Gmail account. So I had them go to junk. And it's quite amazing. My junk cleans out automatically every 24 hours. I just looked at my junk mailbox, and on Google, I have 25 mail messages that came through. But recently, I started getting a bunch of them on my Apple accounts, and they're sending them not only to me.com, but also to iCloud.com. Can you tell me, is this what is called spam? How does it work? How do I get it? I've been putting these things all into junk because I understand the Apple remembers what I put in
right.
junk, and the next time it comes through, it just automatically
right.
goes there. Is there anything better that I can do?
With online email, that's probably the best way to deal with that. And spam is sending out emails trying to solicit you for all the different things that you said and then some. It's unwanted email, and it can be annoying. But like you said, as you add them to your spam folder, Apple and both Gmail, they get more intelligent about, oh, this is qualified spam by this user, therefore it goes in the spam box. And that's how it gets filtered out. You can actively also report spam to them. For people that don't use that, if you're going through an ISP, you can communicate with the internet service provider. That's another thing that you could as well do, is communicate with your internet service provider and, you know, tell them that you're, you know, getting spam, and if there's something bothering you, and just make them aware of it.
Okay.
'Cause, you know, those things should be shut down. They're, you know, unwanted, they're of no interest to people, and all they do is bug us and waste our time and clog up the internet. But the other thing is, for companies that have their own post office box, in other words, they have their own domain, there are typically tools that they can use that will allow them to filter out spam and unwanted email, and to essentially create a blacklist of domains that they don't want to hear from. And, you know, if you get on a blacklist of domains, that means that you're going to get blocked, and that message will get sent back to the sender.
And who would create that that blacklist?
Those are internet service providers.
Okay.
And companies themselves, if they're managing their own post office, you know, for their own domain, they can actively do that as well.
Okay, so like my provider is TDS, and mm-hmm. so that's who I would talk to?
Correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
Yep.
All right, well, very good. Oh, and I did understand, I don't want to go through and take each one of them and try and unsubscribe because there's way too many. Mm-hmm. And I also understand that probably wouldn't work anyway. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's two sides of that. One is sometimes it works. And then the other side is, oh, we have some valid email because they've just contacted us.
And you okay. get more.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there are actually some people out there that collect all those email addresses and say, hey, look, I have 6 million or 10 million emails. Would you like to buy them from me?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I seem to, the increase just seemed to be kind of coincidental with a website that I went on, and I actually asked them to send me daily emails.
It's yep, a, that's how you got flagged and tagged. And,
oh,
yep.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, yep. Thanks a lot for calling,
good
Jerry.
Luck.
Barbara in Appleton, your turn now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thank you for answering my call.
Sure.
I have a question with my iPhone. It continually tells me about the fact that I can't, when I take pictures, your memory is, I don't have enough memory, I need to upgrade. Could he explain to me what this is? And I erase all, you know, I delete all my pictures and I put them on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, as far as I'm concerned, they're not on my iPhone anymore. But then I go to take another picture and it tells me, you know, my memory is disappearing and I need to upload it, and does this memory, am I supposed to spend some more money to upgrade it? And
Why do we have to keep upgrading it? Do you have a lot of messages? Do you do a lot of messaging?
No, I'm pretty new on iPhones, and I really don't.
I know because.
What's a lot of messages?
Well, I had about 20 that I just hadn't gotten rid of that were, you know, text messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, there were photos in them and other things, and I deleted all of those text messages, and suddenly I had a whole bunch more memory.
So text messages also relate to your photo memory.
Well, it relates...
anything that's on your phone that you're using, okay? So the fact that you can make a phone call, the fact that you can make a picture, the fact that you can text message or receive text messages or play music or look at videos or browse the web, all those programs use memory. And then anything that it's touching, so web pages, YouTube videos, music files, text messages, pictures, and so forth, when they're downloaded, they actually occupy space in the memory of the phone. The unfortunate thing with iPhones is you have to pick how much memory you think you need for using your phone. So, for example, they may give you an option of 32 gigabytes or 64 or 128 or 256. You can't add or subtract. Well, you can't add to it. You can subtract from it because the more you do with it, the less memory space you have. So there is an app, and I'm not saying for you to do this if you don't feel confident in it, but there's an application called iFunbox, which would allow you to hook up, and also iTunes does this as well. When you hook up iTunes to a computer, it tells you how much space you're using on your phone for all those different pertinent, those main chunks of memory. So it says this is how much you're using for your video, this is how much you're using for your music, and this is how much you're using for your pictures, and what you have left. And I would recommend that you hook up your iPhone to a computer and use iTunes and get a read on it and see what's actually going on. And that might give you some insight into what application is eating up a lot of your memory. The other way to manage it is using an application like iFunbox, which would actually allow you to go in and easily, you know, remove files that, you know, you don't want. You can delete it through the iPhone, but you can... I've used this iFunbox application, and it's useful because it just shows me the files and where they're all located and what's taken up what. And the other thing is, if you've downloaded certain applications, you can also uninstall those, and those can eliminate the use of using extra memory, so freeing up space as well. So if you've downloaded a lot of apps, then that also occupies up a lot of memory.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if I have a new Mac computer too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is the memory from my Macintosh computer and my iPhone
two different
combined?
Nope,
or are they separate memories?
Completely separate memories.
Okay.
Completely separate. And that's why you install iTunes on your Mac, and then you hook up with your cable from your iPhone to your Mac, and when you start up iTunes, at the bottom of the screen it's going to tell you, you know, what's being used in terms of video, pictures, music, and what free space you have.
So I have to hook up the phone to my computer and then open up iTunes from my computer.
Correct. Yep.
Like you said?
Yep.
You might be able to manage that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
now,
I'm
going to give you a couple other quick tips. One is if you don't back up your phone and something happens to it, there is a setting in your phone to allow you to back up the important stuff to the cloud. Okay, Apple gives you a certain amount of space. I believe it's still 5 gig of space. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. A free space that will allow you to back up your contacts and pictures and so forth to the cloud. So if something happens to your phone, you still can retrieve that. The other way is to make a backup file on your Mac for backing up your actual iPhone. That's another way to actually back up your phone. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, how do you erase the photos in your cloud that you don't want anymore? It says it's temporary or something.
Yeah, you would have to make sure you have an iCloud account and go in and manage through that way.
You can delete from the cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. The cloud is just another name for internet, and in the way they're saying it's internet storage, it's memory storage for you to use.
So temporary are photos in there that I can go into that temporary too? It doesn't automatically take them out in 30 days or something?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. All right, well, I'll have to play with this again. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, yep. Thanks.
And, you know, another thing that might be useful if you're new to the iPhone, if you're new to any device, I really encourage people to use something like YouTube, because YouTube is... There are so many people out there that share information, love sharing information. I'm not saying it's all good, but, you know, if you're new to an iPhone, you know, there are YouTube videos out there that are going to help you and enlighten you. And even if you learn one new thing of how to do something a little bit better.
You've learned one new thing.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Barbara, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. We'll be back with Peter right after we take a quick look at the news and weather. Stay with us. Taking a look at your personal computer today, I'm Larry Mueller. Peter Green, my guest, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Always great to have Pete stop by. He comes by every couple months, and we talk with him about computers. And one of the things we do right out of the news is to go to his top 10 list. He always has a list of great sites to go to, interesting places. And Pete, what have you got for us this month?
Okay, they're all listed at Infostar.com. Top left, if you go to the top 10 archives or current top 10 in the archives, scroll down to today's date. The first one is called HTML-online.com. And HTML stands for Hypertext Markup Language, which is the web language for putting up web pages. And it's an online editor, so it's not an application that you run on your computer. It actually allows you to do code editing right on your screen. It's very impressive.
Wow.
Number two, is fun because, you know, being engaged in professional sports in terms of a fan, this playoffsbracket.com, so it's playoffs, plural, bracket.com, tracks all the playoff brackets for the championships, for the NBA, all the major league sports, plus the NCAA and the World Cup of Soccer. And it's just, you know, it's a visual display of the chart, and you can go back a few years in each one and see how they all made out. Number three is called thescore.com, and it's a sports news resource, what's trending, top news stories, fantasy sports, trade news, and so forth. Number four is a UK-based tech resource, but it's about computers, cell phones, TVs, and more. It's called TrustedReviews.com. But I took a look at it, and the information is still useful because the products that are sold there are also sold here as well.
Sure.
If you're looking at the next iPhone, which would be the iPhone 8, unless they decide to change numbers, iPhone8look.com tracks and researches rumors and features, and also has a timeline release on all the other iPhones that are out there. So if you're looking back in terms of iPhone history, it's good information. Youku.com is a free web forum hosting resource that is ad-supported. So, for example, if you wanted to start an online discussion about the NCAA brackets and the playoff run at the beginning, you could post a forum that you started through this resource. And if you decided you didn't want to show ads anymore, you'd have to upgrade to one of their choices for a fee. I don't use it. I don't endorse it, but it looks like a very useful resource to know. Mentioned earlier, DuckDuckGo.com is a search engine that doesn't track you, and I put a link to their privacy policy. This next one is an open source voice over IP phone application called Linphone, L-I-N
phone.org, and it makes it possible to communicate freely over the internet, voice, video, and text messaging. The next one is called whispersystems.org, and that is also a private messaging and private calling for iPhones and Android phones. And they have a very popular app called Signal, which is available for both the Android and the iPhone. And the last one, which claims to be Tech Untangled, so it features a lot of how-to guides and videos, is called LifeWire, LifeWire.com. And then I put up the information as related to the Do Not Call registry. Wisconsin used to have their own, but now it's the federal one that they refer to, and there are links on how to report unwanted calls, and I put other links up there about stuff we talked opening the show about, privacy apps and the CM security that I use for blocking telemarketers.
So find all that on Infostar.com.
Yep.
All right. On to Sue and McFarland next. Sue, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
I'm having a problem with my computer just in the last few days where I'm watching a video online and it'll play for about 3 seconds and then the volume drops to zero. But when I look at the volume indicator on the video itself, it says it's up as high as it can go.
What are you using for the computer? Using a, is it a laptop, tablet,
it's
Windows?
It's a laptop.
Is it Windows? Or
yeah, Windows 10.
Okay. What are you using to watch the videos?
Well, I'm on Facebook and I'm watching a, you know, a video that's on a post.
Okay.
Probably from YouTube. I'm not sure.
Okay. Which browser are you using?
Firefox.
Firefox. Well, let's see. A couple of things I would probably try. One is I would check and see if there's an update available for Firefox and make sure it's up to date. I would also...
Pretty sure it is.
Okay. I would also probably make sure you have another browser, maybe something like Google Chrome or Microsoft Internet Explorer or Edge, and see if it's reacting the same way.
Okay. So, good idea.
So try that.
That's often the case.
Yeah.
It works on one and not on the other.
Yep. Okay. Which operating system are you using? Windows 7, Windows 10? Windows 10.
When I look down at the indicator in the bottom right of my computer where it says speakers and dual headphones for the volume,
right,
it says 0%. And I've gone in there and, you know, I go in and open the volume mixer and raise it up. And then I start to play something, and it still goes for a few seconds, and then it drops to zero again. And I've gone into the settings, into the volume stuff, and I haven't seen anything odd. I did a troubleshoot, and it didn't come up with anything wrong. So I'm really confused.
There's a, if you Google search it, I know I've used it fairly recent. If you type in Microsoft Fix It and go to that site, and... You might have to go through a series of questions, but, you know, and tell them you're having problems with audio on your system and see if it comes up with a solution. Sometimes it applies a fix. It's a Microsoft resource that might be helpful for you to try and troubleshoot that. But I would try and use another browser and see how it reacts to that. Sometimes the browsers have developed glitches and... if it seems to be the browser having the problem, one option is to uninstall it and download the latest version and reinstall it. Even though that you've applied updates and so forth, sometimes that does fix the problem.
All right.
But I would check with the other browser to make sure.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, Sue. John in Elm Grove, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I was wondering if Peter might have any suggestions for me. I'm looking for... either a laptop-based or a PC-based high-def DVR system. You know, something that I can plug a roof antenna into and plug it into a computer and record high-def programming, commercially available, you know, stations. And save it to the hard drive and back it up if necessary.
Yeah. So you want to download and record video on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, just like it was a DVR box.
Yeah.
But just off a TV, you know, just off, nothing pirated, just off a TV commercial channels.
Right. I would. So do you want to call that stuff up through like a media center, or do you want to?
Well, I've never been really, been big on media center or, you know, that sort of stuff. I just like to open an app and play it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I'm not a big media consumer. I just, there's just certain things I'd like to not have to record on my, you know, cable-based DVR.
Right.
Because it just clogs them up, and I'd like to keep some of the stuff.
Right. I would probably, unless you can find a laptop that has a dedicated video card, I would probably, I mean, that's where they save on the cost, is not having a dedicated video card.
Right.
So you have shared
the motherboard.
Right. I would probably, whether or not you use Windows or Apple, I'd probably go with a pretty decent amount of RAM, so probably like 32 gigs of RAM. Hard drive, I would say, I don't know how much you're planning on recording, but...
You can burn up a lot of hard drive in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, especially with HD. So you're probably going to want to be looking at something in the neighborhood of probably 5 or 6 gigs of memory.
Sure.
For or terabytes of memory for the hard drive.
Terabyte. Well, I've been running on a 1 terabyte drive with a product by Hullpage, but it managed to successfully burn up on me, literally.
Hmm.
So I'm looking for something else.
Yeah, I would probably look at a resource like CNET.com.
Oh, sure.
And look at some of the reviews for what they have out there. They might have some, you know, suggestions in terms of hard drive capacity and also backing it up as well. You're going to need some kind of network-attached storage or backup device that's going to allow you to, you know, move things probably through network connection.
Yeah, right now I just back up to a USB 1 terabyte drive, but I can see where I'd run that up.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty slow to back up that kind of size of files. And then as far as video cards, they can get pretty pricey. But I think the main thing is, you know, looking at video cards that just give you good performance. And again, a resource like CNET is going to give you some good feedback. But in conjunction with that, I would go to some of the sites that sell the products like Tiger and Buy.com and Newegg.com.
Okay.
And look at the reviews of what people have posted about those products. Because they will give you some insight into what might be a better option for you in terms of, you know, what you're looking for video, for the hard drive, for processing speed.
Now, one thing seems to be a certainty. You know, the people that write reviews are generally upset about something.
Correct, yes. But they do share the good things, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
All right, thanks, John.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun. Appreciate the call. Robert and Marion, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a HP Slate 7 that I've been listening to a music service on for 2 years or more. And about 3 weeks ago, it basically stopped working on this particular music service. Everything works right down to the point where you pick out the channel and it's going to start playing music for you, and then it says please wait, like it always did, but usually it just waited a few seconds. Now it waits forever.
Have you restarted the device?
I've changed got the new app from the App Store a couple of times.
Okay.
I don't know what you mean by restarting the device.
So, in other words, you've shut it off and turned it back on, and it still behaves the same way.
Right, and I've wiped everything out of the tablet that you can wipe out, and put a few, you know, put that app and a few others back on, and it's just like they turned that. Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It works. That music service works on my phone. It works on my laptop, but it will not work on my tablet that I've been using for years.
I would probably contact them and see if they're even aware. Sometimes, you know, they make subtle changes and then they're just not aware of the consequences. And for whatever reason, it might have affected your laptop. There could be some hardware issues, but you're saying, does it work in terms of using any other music service? Have you tried anything else?
My tablet works on other music, yes.
So like something like Pandora or...
Yeah, it works on that and radio stations and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there might have been something that they subtly changed that they're not aware of that's causing problems with your system.
I rather suspected that, but I can't get a hold of them. You call their phone number and says, please look us up on the Internet. Mm-hmm. And I go to the Internet and I find the place where I can send them a
message.
And then I get about halfway through the email and everything just disappears. Mm. So I don't know what's going on.
Oh.
Yeah, other choices might be like Facebook page or...
Facebook might be the best.
Yeah.
I can't think of... Unless the company went out of business.
Because if you're using the audio, you know, the same way with other applications and it's working, and it's something that they're doing that's preventing you from hearing it, it's got to be them.
And if you can't get a hold of them, maybe they're not there anymore.
Yeah, that could be an indication of the problem.
Yeah. I would go to Facebook, though, and check and see there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worth a try anyway. Good luck, Robert. Thank you. Oh, boy. Mary in Greendale, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My computer keeps bringing up when I log on that I have a security update, a smart security update. A couple of years ago, I did an update for Windows, and my computer crashed, which I heard was kind of common for whatever the new Windows had been. And I had to pay to have my whole computer rebooted or whatever. I'm not very savvy on the computer. So I am afraid to do any updates. And should I be, or...
Which version of Windows are you using?
I have Windows...
Is it 10?
Pardon? I think it's like 7.
Okay.
Yeah, 6 or 7.
There was a scam going on where people were getting pop-ups that said their Microsoft needed to be, or the computer crashed, and what people were doing was ignoring it, turning off the computer, and turning it back on again, and it worked.
Hmm. Well, with Windows 7, what you can do is, if you go into, you click on your start button, click on apps, and then go to accessories, and within accessories go to tools, and then inside of tools you'll see system restore.
Okay.
And create your own restore point. So that should be turned on, and you should be able to create a restore point for, let's say, for today, April 3rd, and you know, it'll date and timestamp it. So you could actively do that yourself. And then in the control panel, you can go in there and choose to do Windows updates. And if you're missing a Windows update, it will list it there for you.
Okay.
And you can, you know, see what's going to be updated on your system, and you can choose to do that.
Okay.
If you choose,
go ahead.
If you choose not to do the Windows updates that are available, you could go and change the settings so that it says never update. You know, do you update? Do you not update? What's going on with Windows 7 is they're trying to, I believe they're still maintaining security updates on it. but eventually that's going to go away, just like they do.
If I updated, then it would continue maintaining those. Is that right?
Right. But like I said, there is a setting in Windows, the control panel, there's Windows updates, and you can elect to turn that off if you don't want to get more updates. But as far as I know, I don't know the day that Windows 7 is going to be sunsetted, just like they've done with XP and other versions of their operating system, which means that they won't do anything anymore for it.
Okay.
So, you know, those are just some options for you. But I would do the system tools and the restore and creating a new restore point so that if something happens with the update that you get, you can go back, you can flip
restore
it back.
Restore it.
Okay, okay. Yep. And then I have one other question. I used to go to both Yahoo or Firefox. I changed off between the two. Mm-hmm. My Firefox has now started coming up that I couldn't load the XP com, and I was just curious why all of a sudden that happened.
Hmm. There must have been something that, if you want to say, upset the apple cart on your web browser for Firefox, and maybe there's just a bad file in there. Occasionally, you know, computers hiccup and a file has a problem. You could try uninstalling it and reinstalling Firefox for your system. That's one thing to try and do. You said Yahoo, so are you using Internet Explorer? Yahoo would be the search engine. It wouldn't be the browser.
Okay, I have Google. I guess first Google comes up, and then I go to Yahoo.
Oh, okay. So you're referring to the search engine. I would make sure you also have another browser on your system. So Internet Explorer is probably there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably go to the control panel. You can uninstall Firefox if that's one that's misbehaving, having problems, and then reboot your machine and then go to Firefox and download a new version and reinstall it and see how it works.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Some people are wondering, what's best, keeping your computer on or do you turn it off when you're not using it? What do you do, Peter? What do you recommend?
What I do is Monday through Friday, I keep my work systems on. Our servers are on 24/7. They're hooked up to battery backups, so they're isolated from storms. My personal station is not important. Other important systems at work have battery backups, so in the event a storm comes, they will stay on, but they can be shut down or automatically shut down. On weekends, I typically shut them off.
Just leave it off.
My systems, I shut off.
Yeah.
But when I come in the morning, I've already had them rebooted, and they're sitting there ready to go. Does it save a lot of energy? Probably in the long run, not really that much.
Yeah.
But they're ready to go when I show up instead of sitting there waiting.
Yeah, there we go. Pete, thank you so much. You'll be back in a couple months, and you're back on June 5th,
yep.
As a matter of fact. We'll do this all over again.
Thanks, Larry.
Peter Green, a computer consultant with Infostar.com. He'll be back on June 5th. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at women who served in World War I. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.